coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
We are back with Worth Doing Badly, and this week to survey the lessons for the Holy Trinity, or Trinity Sunday, according to the current three-year Series C lectionary. The readings are Proverbs 8 verses 1 to 4 and 22 to 31, Psalm 8, Acts 2, 14a and 22 to 36, and the Gospel is from John 8 verses 48 to 59. We also welcome back our speaker, David Weber.
On this Sunday of the Holy Trinity, John focuses on Jesus' promise that death will not be experienced eternally. The notion that death somehow could no longer be a human problem is at the heart and center of the resurrection. Now, Jesus said, "Before Abraham was, I am." And his hearers then attempted to stone him. So what in those words, "Before Abraham was, I am," were these people so fiercely opposed to and fiercely offended? It was they rightly understood that Jesus was claiming to be God in the flesh. And if that was true, what they had thought, what they had confessed in their creed, "The Lord our God is one," from Deuteronomy 6:4, would somehow be wrong. Jesus seemed to be attacking God's oneness, which was the heart and center of their faith. So if the Father is God, they thought, and if Jesus is God, then polytheism and not monotheism is the truth. Then God is not one, God is multiple. Now, from our point of view, we know that Jesus was introducing us to what we now confess to be the doctrine of the Trinity, where we confess to say that God is both one and three persons, not obviously a concept that's easy to understand or believe. So Jesus's early disclosure of the Trinity in this section of John, his hearers were right to say, to recognize that there are shattering implications if the Trinity is true. If Jesus was God in the flesh, John points out, then time is something very different than what we experience on earth. In the realm of the Trinity, time moves in a way that a man not yet 50 years old, as they pointed out, could be a contemporary of Abraham and also precede Abraham. That confuses our conception of time being one event after another. And Jesus was alerting his hearers that human history has been and would be completely altered. It would not be the story of human success or evil. Human history would be the unfolding story of God's intention to give eternal life to a creation overwhelmed by death. That's what time would mean when the story was completed. And this is why Jesus' resurrection would be the event within the thick of history that would manifest God's intention to keep us from the experience of death eternally. Yes, we would suffer death, but it would be a temporary experience. And if time does not end in death, then time is something very different than what we imagine it to be when we anxiously worry about time running out. In the world of the Trinity, time does not run out. Time marks our running into ever more life and a life that is eternal. Now, obviously this isn't easy to believe or understand. It couldn't be understood. And yet, this is what we desire as human beings. Time and death, this is what we desire. We want them to be transformed. And John says, this is what the Trinity is doing because God intends to deal with us on terms of love. If God was just one person, love eternally would be self-love. God had no one else to love. But if God is triune, that means that love has always been about love for another, love for someone else, love that is essentially defined as sacrificial. So Jesus introduces the concept of the Trinity to show not only is time changed and death changed, but the fact is that God's eternal love, which is defined by sacrifice, is going to be manifested by giving his beloved son to die for the world. And that event would give the world the hope that death will not be experienced eternally. Now, Psalm 8 is selected on Trinity Sunday because it begins and ends with a high praise of God's majesty. But in the middle, there is a question, what is man? And with a psalm that is praising God's majesty, to suddenly shift the focus from God to one of God's creatures, we must ask the question, why is this? Why this shift to God's creation? Because it is such a huge surprise to the psalmist that God should love man. But God does love man because it's not that man is attractive. It's that God is sacrificial in his love. So we can't even ask the question, what attracts God to man? The psalm says, you know, man is vulnerable. We come into this world as baby humans. And as these cute little babies grow up, they become God's enemies. So what merits God's special attention to these vulnerable and rebellious creatures? The surprising attention is not caused by man, but rather expresses God's sacrificial giving of himself, which is the nature of love from eternity in the Trinity. So this creature who God created a little less than the gods with glory and grandeur repeatedly squanders this birthright by loving himself. This creature that was made to rule over the works of God's hands in the way that God rules sacrificially continually exploits this power rather than imitating God's sacrificial love. And yet God loves this creature, and that is God's greatest point of majesty. God is majestic because of his sacrificial love, his care for humanity that does not deserve to be loved, and that care being manifested in the redemption of humanity and to lift us out of the effects of the fall. So the greatness of this redemption would be manifested in time, each and every time fallen creatures freely express their desire to be in God's presence and to give God thanks. That is where God's majesty is most clearly evident, when fallen creatures, sinful creatures, turn to God and desire to be in his presence. Credit to those who put the Old Testament lesson from Proverbs as one of the ways that we don't really come to understand the Trinity, but come to have a better appreciation of what it means to confess God as triune. This passage is a poem, and it answers the question, what did God do before he created the world? The question is silly because it supposes that the only real life that there is in this cosmos is the life that is material, that began after creation, that, you know, God would have been lost to know what to do if he didn't have human beings. The creed declares that the world we know is made up of seen and unseen, and this section about wisdom shows that the unseen world is far more real, far more lasting, far more delightful than the seen world. The real life is not what we see and experience. Real life has takes place in the world of the unseen, and that world is characterized by wisdom. Wisdom, as John would later reveal, is also called the Logos, who was with God before the world was created, who was God, and whose word caused creation to materialize. Now, at the beginning of this poem, which we didn't read, the poem celebrates wisdom's practical benefits for navigating a difficult life. We need wisdom. But in the section that we read here, the emphasis changes to wisdom's relationship with God before the world was created. What did God do before creation? He was delighted in his relationship with wisdom. From eternity, God was love, and that love was directed outside of the self to others. And my Hebrew is not at all up to scratch, so I'm going to have to go with Robert Alter's view that this companionship with wisdom, God found to be, this is his word, fun. So why did God think the world needed saving? This is what this whole Trinity Sunday is about, of Jesus claim to be God and that God would sacrifice himself in order to save the world. The world needed saving because the fall from God made fun the rare exception in existence, when in fact fun is the very atmosphere of life within the Trinity, and it is what fills eternity with rejoicing. It seems unrealistic and beyond any hope to believe that life could ever be defined by delightful fun. We so long for life to be fun that all of us have experiences in our life where we do self-destroying things just to squeeze a bit more fun out of life. Fun in this life is the exception. In the Trinity, it is the very atmosphere of life. That is the essence of God's presence, and that is what is fueling rejoicing, eternal rejoicing in heaven. And that is why our expression of joy and rejoicing and desiring God's presence in this earth is just a foretaste of the feast and the fun to come. We only experience this reality in our longing and not in concrete experiences. And yet, the Trinity Sunday assures us that that longing will not be forever begging, that hunger will not be forever unsatisfied. God promises to restore the condition of the world as it was in the beginning, as it will be when all is said and done, and will give to us now in the presence foretastes of this coming world. Now, in Acts, Peter makes it quite clear that everything that took place was destined to take place with Jesus, his death and resurrection, because it was not possible that Jesus would be held back by death. Death would be defeated. Now, Peter recognized that Jesus' hearers aimed to stone Jesus and eventually successfully crucified him, because he claimed to be God in the flesh. And it was beyond belief that God could come in the flesh and that God could actually suffer and die. Their conception of God's love was such that it was not a sacrificial love. If God was going to establish his kingdom, it would come through power. This was not their idea of God. And so that with the resurrection being a fact of history, Peter again offered Jesus' adversaries a chance to consider their earlier rejection of Jesus Christ's salvation. What if what they meant by salvation was so paltry, when compared to the abolition of decay and death? What if they opposed Jesus because their conception of love was so miserly they could not possibly understand God sacrificially giving his son to die for those who are undeserving? What if their conception of the path of life lacked so much hope and gladness that they could be content with a path that ended in death? So Peter speaks to them and saying their rejection is based upon not a love of life, but a very small and diminished and desiccated view of life in which they haven't yet learned to hope for the utter abolition of death. And that's what Jesus's death and resurrection gave to them, the chance to actually live in this life with the hope that the life that they truly desire will be given to them and that their hunger and thirst for eternity would be satisfied. That's what's at stake when we talk about God being triune.
Thank you, David, and thank you for listening. All the podcasts from this series, Worth Doing Badly, are available from our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app. Go to the App Store or Google Play and get the one that is right for you for free. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other programs on our schedule, write me an email to manager@lutheranradio.co.uk. David and I will be back next week at this same time. Stay on for more here on Lutheran Radio UK.